This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:36 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. So we're going to be moving on to our next story, which is about crowdfunding and more specifically, whether it's appropriate for governments to crowdfund. So this came after Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin launched a special fund this week to financially assist COVID-19 patients, especially those who are unemployed. So the government has contributed 1 million ringgit and members of the public can feel free to pitch in. But the move has received some flack. For instance, an article on the Malaysian Insight that came from Agora Society argues that while it's considerate, additional aid like this should come from the government's pocket instead of taxpayers. And this isn't the first time that the government has created a public fund. You might, of course, recall Tabung Harapan, which the previous Pakatan government created after GE14. You may, in fact, have donated a ringgit or two yourself. I remember that when we did the show, opinions and support were pretty evenly split down the middle. Whether it's the COVID-19 fund or Tabung Harapan, you know, the central thing here that we were thinking of talking about is the bigger question of whether it's appropriate for governments to crowdfund. The reasoning here is if taxation exists for governments to financially address the country's needs and problems, then there shouldn't be a need necessarily to ask the people to bear the burden of additional initiatives such as crowdfunding. And I think that this can go a couple of different ways. On the one hand, the appeal of crowdfunding, in doing research for this, one of the examples that came up pretty early on were South Korea, more particularly, and South Koreans donating gold to the government's efforts during the time of the financial crisis. And while there were questions at the time about no matter how much gold you donate, how much is that actually going to help? One of the things that came up was at least it gives people a sense of control and responsibility in a situation where when the economy is tanking, you might feel like, oh, what can I do? And at least this is one thing that you can, in fact, accomplish. But when it comes to something like this, I think for me, at least right now, the mechanics of the situation feel a little vague. There is, for instance, how are you going to identify who that money goes to? What avenues is that money going to funnel away from? You know, like where is it going to go? How is it going to get there? I think these are some basic questions that need to be asked because this idea of affected Malaysians or COVID-19 patients, you know, I'm just thinking here about who this encompasses exactly. And if you already have 1 million ringgit all ready to roll out for that, then this idea of contributing more, where is that going to go? So those are some of my questions. But in general, I'd just like to know as well, what would you give money for if the government asked for it? And also, have you contributed to a crowdfunding endeavor before? What was that experience like for you? You can weigh in. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on the line is Dr. Cassie Lee, who's a senior fellow and coordinator of the Regional Economic Studies Program at the IC's Yusof Ishak Institute. Cassie, thank you so much for joining us. So, what are your initial thoughts on the COVID-19 fund?
Oh, my initial thoughts. I think it's an interesting initiative because when you look at some of the stimulus packages that the government has introduced when Dr. Mahathir was the interim prime minister, most of the support has been aimed towards the businesses. There are, of course, in the stimulus package, support in terms of the Bantuan Sara Hidup, right? The acceleration of the disbursement date. There's a bit of also discussion in that in terms of the employment insurance system. So this, I presume, would aim at complementing some of the government initiative that's already currently being implemented.
And while we're talking about whether the government should engage in crowdfunding at all, how would you compare the COVID fund to Tabung Harapan in terms of, I guess, mechanics or meaning?
Well, it's a bit different because when you look at the Tabung Harapan, the idea was to help alleviate the burden faced by the new government. So it's a much more macro-oriented. This is towards helping individuals rather than helping the country's fiscal situation. The only thing that is closer to this is there is a Tabung Bantuan Bencana Negara, right? That disaster management fund also has a crowdfunding element to it. But we do not know the extent to which this Tabung Bantuan Bencana Negara, how successful it has been, how much money was collected. Obviously, natural disaster is quite different from the sort of like disease epidemics, right? Because if you look at the definition of natural disaster, it involves flooding, haze, and landslides, I think. To then add COVID-19 to part of natural disaster, I think it's quite an interesting move. So this method, it has been used before, right? But for different purposes. When you read the discussions on the government reason for when they introduced the Tabung Bantuan Bencana Negara, one of the reasons they gave was to avoid prevalence of fraudulent practices by people purportedly trying to collect money. So I see this as the same reason can be applied for the COVID-19 fund, I think.
Mm. And when it comes to the government engaging in a crowdfunding effort like this, some criticism has been made that people already pay taxes and that should be utilised for various purposes, including something like this. What are your thoughts? Is it fair in some instances for the government to crowdfund?
Well, I think the question to ask is, can government not basically undertake the role that the crowdfunding effort is trying to achieve, right? So this is a bit more difficult to answer. Yeah, well, people pay taxes, but under ordinary circumstances, this is quite a different. It's a shock to the economic system, which the government may not have budgeted for. We know that a significant share of the government revenue come from petroleum revenue. So not only do we have COVID-19, but because of the significant decline in oil prices also means that the government is quite fiscally constrained, actually. Because if you look at the COVID-19 fund, it's supposed to provide income support for people that are affected through employment because they are sick from COVID-19 or because they are being quarantined, right? I do not have figures how many people are actually being quarantined and how much is the size of the fund that's required. We also do not know how long COVID-19 will be a serious problem in Malaysia. So there's a lot of things that you also cannot plan for at the moment. So the crucial thing is, of course, when you do a crowdfunding exercise, the government needs to be very transparent about how much it has collected and how it intends to use the fund. I think that's something that the government needs to bear in mind.
And have you seen any instances where crowdfunding by the government has actually worked out well or, well, otherwise, whether locally or abroad?
Well, I do not recall, except for the Tabung Harapan, which collected close to 202 million ringgit, I think. So obviously they did manage to collect a sizable amount. That, I think, has worked rather well. I mean, of course, the sum collected is very, very small compared to the national debt, right? But that gives you some measure of public willingness to contribute to this. But bear in mind also, unlike the Tabung Harapan case, the financial standing of household or the public is also a bit more insecure, you know, because we are now talking about economic slowdown, the risk of people losing jobs. So there might be a bit of reluctance on the part of people. People might be less generous to actually contribute to a COVID-19 fund compared to if you have a big natural disaster, like an earthquake, where you can see where it only affects a smaller portion of the population and it's much more visible, the damage, right? So with COVID-19, the damage. There are statistics about people falling sick and people dying, but the psychological impact is not as great as, let's say, a tsunami or an earthquake, I think. So that, and combined with the deteriorating economic situation, that might affect the success of this kind of crowdfunding exercise.
So what can be done to ensure strict checks and balances, especially for a fund like this, which was initiated in a spontaneous time of emergency?
Well, to begin with, you should have, for example, you should have a website indicating how much you are collecting. If you're serious about it, you can go on the media and organize sort of like, not big events, because you have, this is COVID-19, so you're not supposed to encourage big public, but you can do it to TV stations, you know, having people talk about it and then getting people to kind of do online kind of donation. So that's on the collection part. On the usage part, certainly there should be regular updates on what are you spending on, how much are you spending on the different items. And of course, the normal process of having at a later stage, having it audited in terms of how the funds have been used. So these are things that you need. So the transparency doesn't have to be, you don't have to wait until a year before you do an annual audit, but it can be done, you know. This problem is ongoing and it could be escalating, right? So as we speak, as we collect the funds, the problem that you are trying to address through this fund is changing also, right? So it's sort of you have a transparency in a very dynamic sense.
And when it comes to this situation, do we actually have enough existing social safety nets, like SOCSO, for instance, that would provide the required assistance?
This I'm not entirely clear. I'm not an expert in labour law or industrial relations, whether SOCSO have provision on people who are unemployed because of COVID-19. Again, it's very complicated because you may have businesses that enterprise that go out of business because of the deterioration in economic conditions, especially in the services sector. How do you, and when workers are sort of terminated because of that, you have to do a lot of background check on the causes, before you can disperse that kind of funds. So it's not like your physical injury. This is based on economic conditions, right? If you look at the stimulus budget, there is some discussion. I'm looking at the document now, Measure 14, Employment Insurance System, for example, which has a fund up to about 1.1 billion ringgit for workers that are retrenched from affected sectors. So this, to some extent, I think will be useful. So there is some support from this employment insurance system that can. So to what extent this COVID-19 fund can supplement this, or it's something that we need to look at it carefully. I mean, we also talk about people from the informal sector that can be affected. How do you then address this kind of issues, I think?
And Cassie, one last question before you go. Where do you think the public enters the picture in all of this, right? Does the public have some sort of responsibility, for instance, to contribute?
But it can be. I mean, this kind of fund is a philanthropic exercise to some extent. It's voluntary, so it depends on each individual, their personal circumstances, their values, whether some people feel it's a government responsibility so they do not infant. That's their view. I mean, everybody is entitled to have their own ideological perspective as to where, what the government role of government is and what is the role of the general public, right? But bear in mind, these are COVID-19, like other types of natural disaster, is not something predictable. But on the other hand, government also have the responsibility to prepare for this kind of events, actually. Some developed countries do that even before disease epidemics, or let's say you have a drought, on a regular basis, they actually begin accumulating sufficient funds for this kind of rainy days. Because although you cannot predict when it will happen, whether it will be in 3 years' time, 5 years, or in this case, the last time we had something like this was a SARS in 2002. So even though you cannot predict when it will happen, governments do have the responsibility to allocate funds, sometimes something like an insurance funds that you can sort of use when it happens, even though you do not know when it will happen. For governments who have not done that, then the question that arises is then, should the public then pay? Bear in mind that Malaysia, on average, Malaysia do not collect as much tax revenues as many other countries, right? So our tax to GDP ratio is very, very low. So that argument saying that, oh, we have collect taxes, may not be true in the sense that we may not pay enough tax for that. So, you know, so that's an important question to reflect on, I think.
Cassie, thank you very much for weighing in. And I think that note was a perfect reminder that it is tax season. So the tax man is going to be coming and knocking. Of course, you just heard there from Dr. Cassie Lee, Senior Fellow and Coordinator of the Regional Economic Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute, weighing in on governments and crowdfunding in light of the newly announced COVID-19 fund, in which the government has placed R1 million, but the public can contribute. So we've just been examining, I guess, what that actually means in terms of governments and crowdfunding, considering that we already pay taxes. So Gwen, for example, on Twitter says, "We'll never contribute to a crowdfunding plea from the government because I'm already taxed." And then eMacro, among many others, has some trust issues, I think, to put it mildly. Everybody is worried about where this money would go. There are also some concerns about, I suppose, some familiar faces in the not just in the cabinet, but in power, back in government, and worries about returning to old systems of political patronage, all of which I think, up and until we are shown any different, or up and until we are reassured in some way, I understand that those worries will linger. Like I said, I would like to know the mechanism, first and foremost, the mechanism, how it is that you're planning to decide how long you're going to be parceling out this money for. Because again, R1 million that's already in there is a fair amount. We have, let's see, a few different thoughts coming through, including this from BF, who says, "Regarding the crowdfunding, I think it shows how our country is doing. I mean, it seems like the government is financially struggling, or why would you ask money from the taxpayers?" Which I think was an issue that was raised by Cassie. Nini, who says, "Please read this out," says, "I wonder how much money had been horse traded for all this recent party hopping, and now you're asking money for crowdfunding." So I think I wanted to read that simply because it does reflect the level, the general tone and level of mistrust that's coming through quite strongly in the messages that are anti this particular initiative. So if you would like to weigh in, how do you feel about government's crowdfunding? You can, of course, call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.